This week on the Koshcast, we take you through the lopsided knockout phase of these Euro 2016 round of 16, where Portugal have made it to the quarterfinals by coming third in a group with Iceland and Hungary and beating Croatia without a shot on target for 2 hours of football. No major surprises elsewhere, as France, Wales, Poland and Germany also make it through. The Copa Centenario is now at its final stage, as we get a rematch of the final from last time around, where Chile tried to win their second on the trot, while Messi and co. try to avoid their third final loss with Argentina. Momo of the Week is as present as ever, and we end with Brexit talk and how that can affect the EPL. And now, to pick up our mic from the pond and do some good potting. Let's go. All right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Koshcast. I've got myself, Mohamed, here, and Ruché.
Hello.
So we're missing, again, two of the regulars. Alex is in Italy, still, and Bernie is in Calgary?
He's somewhere west,
yeah. Yeah, Canada, West Canada, right?
Some scouting report that he's, you know, put himself on.
He's working on, yeah, find that next Canadian gem, or first, we should say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, let's get right into it. As we said, we will be talking, obviously, about these round of these knockout round of 16s at the Euros. Let's do it chronologically. Why not?
Yeah? Sure. I mean, where do you want to start? There's a lot of talking points that we got to go over.
So, let's talk Switzerland-Poland. I think this was one of the better games that we saw, as we will talk about some of the other less active ones. But Switzerland-Poland was quite good, ended 1-1, all the way to penalties, and Poland nicking that 5-4, Xhaka missing his decisive kick.
Yes, this was the first knockout match of the tournament, and it was also one of the better knockout matches of the tournament so far. I think both teams, kind of low profile, you know, they both had nothing to lose going into this match, and they both had a belief that they could win this game, and you saw that in the first half. Poland were all over Switzerland.
Yep, Poland were really, really good in the first half.
Creating a lot of chances.
Yep, creating a lot of chances. Lewandowski didn't look too good, though. Had he been on better form, I think Poland could have scored a few more goals. But their goal came from Blazikowski at the end, which is actually the first goal that Switzerland have conceded from open play. Their previous ones have all been free kicks and penalties. But then that all changed in the second half.
I think Switzerland started building into this game. Poland started sitting back. And, you know, although it was pretty even for a period of time in the second half between, you know, chances created, I think Switzerland, towards the last 20 minutes of the game, were absolutely dominant. They hit the post. They hit the crossbar. Yeah.
And also they stretched Fabianski, making him make a lot of really, really saves. He was incredible in this game, really keeping Switzerland at bay for the longest time. But then
there's a free kick off Ricardo Rodriguez.
Oh, what a save that was. That was destined. I mean, can you imagine how Rodriguez felt? This is my moment, left back, top corner from a free kick.
Equalizing goal, But better things were to come for the Swiss.
Definitely. And I mean, we all saw, I'm pretty sure we agree this is goal of the tournament.
I mean, so far, there's nothing that's going to, there's nothing in my mind or, you know, the Kosh mind, collectively, that can top this. This was a bicycle kick goal from the outside of the box.
It was, and then, Fabianski, like we said, wasn't top form, and anything but perfection, he would have saved it, but it was right next to the post from so far out, and the commentary was
amazing. It went in off the post.
Yep.
What was the commentary for this one?
It was just, like, you heard the Swiss commentary, they showed it online, and the guy went absolutely nuts. I mean, obviously, the goal was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And the reason being, honestly, during the build-up, you're like, okay, well, nothing's happening here. The ball kind of got cleared outside the box. Good Polish defending.
Yeah. We saw Lichtsteiner appear on the right wing.
Yeah.
So you could tell that, you know, players were out of position, just kind of throwing the kitchen sink at the Poles.
Yeah.
And they duly got their reward.
True. So that got us to 1-1. And then really at extra time, both of them were kind of happy with the scoreline, taking it to penalties. The keepers didn't make any saves.
Actually, there was one big save from Fabianski again, actually. An open header. Aaron Dirdiak actually broke through the lines.
Oh, he should have scored that one.
Point blank header. Yeah, I think, you know, this was a save that actually helped Poland go through to the next round. Because
Definitely.
Kept the score at 1-1. Poland were not going for a goal at that point. Only the Swiss were trying to attack. And, you know, it went to penalties. And Granit Xhaka.
Yep, he missed his penalty quite wide off the mark. He tried to put it on the left-hand side. He's a lefty, but it went quite wide.
It was puzzling. He took it with the outside of the foot, so it had the outside curl. So it was curling away, and it curled away from the post.
Yep, so team captain there missing the penalty. Still young, but I mean, he did come out later. Obviously, I apologize for it, but I mean, what are you going to do? These things happen. We've seen better players. We've seen this tournament. A lot of players miss penalty. Ronaldo missed one. Very crucial one in the group stages. We'll talk about another one.
It is very nerve-wracking to, you know, step up there, take the penalty, you know, that pause before you kick.
Definitely, and I think it's more nerve-wracking when you're doing it for your national team than for your club, because you're thinking about all the fans back home, all your actual like fans from your country. And you know what? Things happen.
That's one thing I want to add about these Euros. Like every time, you know, the Euros come around or the World Cup comes around, it's always, you know, it's in between club footballing seasons, and club football takes up so much of these players and fans' time.
Yeah.
So that when the Euros come around, you're almost not thinking about the Euros. But when you're in the Euros, it's a whole different world altogether.
I agree. So that's the first team through, Poland on that left side of that bracket, that kind of weak left side of the bracket. They're joined by Wales.
I don't know. I don't think there's any weak teams in this.
Well, game. I mean, we've got all the big teams on the right-hand side. You know, the Italy, Spain, England, that Germany, France. Joining them is Wales in the next round by beating Northern Ireland 1-0.
Yes.
So
historic match, this one.
I mean, for both, really, for Northern Ireland to be in the round of 16, but also for Wales reaching the quarterfinal in their first attempt.
Big, you know, as you said, for both teams. Both teams were celebrating in the streets to make this achievement out of the group stage. Yep. To be fair, you know, three teams are qualifying from four out of six groups. But with that being said, still an achievement. And Wales...
Fair to say, game of two halves, this one.
Game of Thrones of two halves?
The first half was absolute disgrace. There was no shot on target. It was really bad. No quality. Just balls getting pinged back and forth.
But to be fair, there was a point that you had made earlier about, you know, had the Premier League not had so many foreign players in it, it would look exactly like this game.
So basically in 2019 when Brexit kicks in, it would just be Johnny Evans pinging the ball to Ashley Williams back and forth.
Exactly.
Championship
players.
I mean, to be fair, this game had a lot of championship players. But, you know, that's what you get. Also, the ref was English, so it was quite a local game.
Great advert for the future Premier League this one.
So I mean, Wales in this game, let's talk about the second half. They started growing into it a little bit more. As usual, Ramsey and Joe Allen playing really well in midfield. I know Ramsey and Bale get a lot of the plaudits this tournament, but to me, Joe Allen is playing really well.
Yes.
He's creating a lot of chances. He's being that engine in midfield. He's giving them that solid feel in midfield, which when Ramsey bombs forward and does his flicks and tricks, Allen is there to kind of give them that shape, which I've really enjoyed watching.
There definitely is a sense of industry to the Welsh team. They have Ramsey, who does it for Arsenal. We talk about his consistency with Arsenal. He's not a consistent player over the course of the season.
But on his day...
On his day, he is. Yeah. And with a tournament in which they've already exceeded their expectations, it makes it easier for him to perform at this level.
Right, it's more freedom. You don't have that pressure that maybe someone in the English midfield has, let's say. Right?
Sure, yeah. And with Bale as a role model, you know, it helps him and Lallana and other players on the team to play better.
Yeah, Lallana, there's no Lallana. Lallana's in England.
I meant Allen.
Yeah, Joe. I know. That's very similar. A lot of L's. But with Wales, you always have that Bale factor, where even if he's not playing well, which he did in this game, he will still come up with something. And his cross led to the own goal, which, to be fair, Robson Cano was going to put in regardless if the...
Strange things have happened in football, but the odds of him putting it in were pretty high, I'd say.
Sure. I know what you mean. Yeah, he could have missed. He could have.
It is a Premier League game, after all.
Yeah, that's true. Bale's cross was really whipped in. You know those ones which are right between the defender and the goalie, and it's very hard to defend.
Brilliant cross.
Wales go 1-0 up, and then they really close out this game. Ashley Williams with some terrific, heroic defending. I mean, I think at the end there, he was holding his arm. It was almost like he dislocated his shoulder, but he insisted to stay on, and that's what you get from
Real, real medieval-style battle here, you know, coming from the Dark Ages. But hard on Gareth McAuley. to score an own goal. He was in a very tight place. He had to go for the ball. No chance.
Yeah, he couldn't let it go because, like we said, Kanu was right there.
Yeah, and you know what? Northern Ireland should hold their heads high because they have exceeded expectations.
Also, their fans have been great. The fans, I mean, compared to, let's say, the English fans, the Northern Ireland fans have been a great kind of role model on how to just approach these tournaments. They've been fantastic. They've been taking it in stride, just happy to be there. And it's always good to see.
Fully agree.
So, joining Wales and Poland, we have Portugal, which was a worse game than the first half of Wales and Northern Ireland.
This is the worst game in the tournament so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, hands down. And I think that it could very well be the worst game of the, you know, 2000 of the new millennium.
Yeah, yeah. No. In one of these tournaments. I agree. There's been some bad ones in the recent, in 2008 Euros or something, but this one.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking statistics such as, you know, zero shots from either team.
Yeah.
So zero shots on target total in the 90 minutes of open play.
Yep. And give another like 20 minutes in the extra time, something ridiculous like that.
We were blessed to see one goal in before penalties, which was nice. But an interesting stat is, the first shot of the match, at the 105th minute or so, whatever it was 1 second before the last shot of the match.
Yeah, so this game, nothing happened for 90 minutes, absolutely nothing. And then you got, in that 105th minute or so, or 107th minute, you got a flurry of action for like 2 minutes, and then it died down again. So you got Croatia really pressing in the extra time. They were the ones that had that ambition, that belief that they could win this game, and that they were favorites, right? Perisic hitting the post with a really good header. And
that was a highlight reel, along with his hair.
Along with his hair. His hair was fantastic. You could play chess on that.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, you actually could.
And then from that same attack, Portugal went up on the counterattack and scored the sweatiest of goals.
Yeah, it was very ugly.
Nani, like, toe-poking shot / pass.
Yeah. Quaresma should have taken his shirt off because someone deserved to be booked for how ugly this goal was.
Yeah, Ronaldo's finish was a bit timid.
Very timid. Goalie got a good hand on it. I think he was just trying to focus on getting it on target.
Yeah, Ronaldo just wanted to really get on target, yeah.
Yeah, right. And if you had one chance, this was it. And Quaresma, the sub coming on, has a point-blank header to finish.
So Portugal as a whole here in this tournament, they came third in a group that has Iceland and Hungary. They barely beat Croatia. I wouldn't even say deservingly. I mean, Croatia, to me, on the balance of play, should have, you know, if you had to pick, I would have sent them through. And I don't know. I mean, they're lucky that they're on this weaker side of the draw that we talked about. So they have a really big chance. I mean, they play Poland next. They could also luck their way through that one. And all of a sudden, they're in the semis.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the new format of the tournament has given Portugal a second life, almost. And now they have Poland next, and it's going to be difficult to watch, to be honest. I know that Poland is a very exciting team. They also play on the counter. But with Portugal in this form,
it's not going to be the best of games, that's for sure.
And I hope they really start Renato Sanches, because that was the best player on the field.
He came on as a sub.
In a 50th minute. And he was the man of the match.
He really changed the game. He gave them that drive. He didn't look 18, let's put it that way.
He's not 18.
And I mean, Bayern Munich don't sign these youngsters for nothing. They clearly see something in him. United wanted them to. So clearly he's got the talent. And he could be the next big thing, or one of these. So I'm quite excited to see how he does at Bayern next season. But you know what? This tournament, they still have a long way to go. They should also think that they could beat Poland. So that's at least two more games that they have. And he's got more time to shine.
And really, they should start Renato Sanches against Poland.
They should. They should. But you did mention, I think, before we started, that Pepe and Fonte had a really good partnership this game.
Yes, they did. Really well. Yes, they did. Fonte was impressive. You know, replacing, I think, Bruno Alves or Ricardo Carvalho, one of them.
Both. Carvalho played last game, but he was replaced by Fonte. So Portugal, from a defensive point of view, playing really well. Their left-back, Guerrero, is actually really good. He just signed for Dortmund. So they played really well from a defensive point of view. Croatia, from an attacking point of view, Perisic and Modric were obviously fantastic. Perisic was probably their best player. They have a player called Vida.
The defender.
Yeah, I'm not going to even pretend I know that much about him, but in this game, he had three clear-cut chances to end the game. A few headers that last, at 1-0 with Portugal 1-0 up, he had that volley with the left foot, just off the, like,
It was an agonizing game for Vida. Poor guy. I mean, he had several chances just going wide of the post.
Yes.
And even after Portugal scored, he could have tied the game.
He could have. Unlucky there.
But it just wasn't their day. What can you say?
Serna's last game. He's done. I mean, he had a weird tournament. His dad passing away halfway through the tournament. He flew back, came back, led the team in these games. And now he's retiring from international football.
So. Yeah, and there's one more thing about the Croatian football. Their fans were put in the spotlight earlier this tournament.
I'm surprised nothing has come out of that yet. There's no sanctions or anything.
Well yet. I think there's a lot of stuff that's to be disclosed or some internal investigations with FIFA going on, because there is some shady business going on with the Croatian FA, with the fan clubs. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to really just find someone immediately in the wake of something like that. But I hope that the steward's hand has improved.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was quite sad.
I would be looking forward to the result of that. So that fine or whatever.
I mean, it's totally got kind of hushed, and I totally forgot about it. And like you bring it up now, I'm like, yeah, nothing happened.
Yeah.
Anyways, the next day we had France playing Ireland. Obviously, the host here as favorites, but it didn't go as planned. It didn't seem like Ireland got the script. Going 1-0 up in like the third minute, I think, from a Brady penalty. Unsavable.
Smash and grab raid.
Yeah.
The fastest penalty in the history of the European Championships.
What, like ever?
Ever, yes. Earliest penalty in the game. So good for Ireland. Good for
They tried to hold on, but obviously they fell back. They tried to soak up the pressure, but France were just too good. Yeah, Payet, Pogba, Griezmann. We saw a lot of chances.
Pogba obviously starting the game sloppily, but grew into it. It was all France after this.
It was. But Ireland did well to keep it at 0-0 until halftime. And then even within the first 10 minutes of the second half. So it looked like they might try and, like you said, smash and grab this whole thing. But then Griezmann really stepped up big.
Yeah.
He has that uncanny ability for such a small guy to score a lot of headers.
Yeah.
He puts his neck muscles, like, he doesn't just hit him, he actually directs them exactly where he wants them, and it looks quite good when he does it.
It was a great cross by Sanya, I believe.
Yes.
And Griezmann in the center of the box heads it past the goalkeeper very fast. It was a very good header, as you said.
Yeah.
But then 3 minutes later, after the kickoff,
a long
ball was headed down by Giroud.
Well, what happened was the Northern Ireland defenders both went on Giroud for the long ball. He out-muscled both of them and did really well to kind of put it in Griezmann's path.
Yes.
And Griezmann, the first touch to bring it down under control, didn't need another one.
You mentioned that first touch by Griezmann. And it's very easy when you're just watching a replay to overlook that first touch. It just looks like he did it very smoothly. Yep. But if you actually look, as Mohamed pointed out to me, I looked a little bit closer, I noticed that he stepped on it, but not...
So what he did was, if he had taken that with the side of his foot, he might have miscontrolled it a little bit. But because he's a smart player, he knows that the best thing to do at that point was to kind of dampen it with the bottom of his foot, with the studs. And that really just set him up for the easiest of finishes. And most times when goals are scored, a lot of times it's that touch before the finish that really dictates whether you're going to score a goal or not. The finishing is not necessarily the hardest part. It's, can you set yourself up for an easy finish? And that's what he did.
Case in point is Payet's fantastic goal in the opener of this tournament.
Yep.
One touch, two touch.
Exactly.
Very little time to set himself up, and he did.
Agreed. And that's really what separates the good players. They seem to have more time because they need less touches on the ball and less time on the ball.
Yes.
So France did grab two very quick goals there, which I think, I mean, for the host, it's always better for the tournament to have the host in it as long as possible. It keeps that atmosphere going.
France were also, they were laying siege to the Irish goal. Shortly after this, Griezmann was set through and he was open, he was clear, and then he was brought down by the Irish defender.
I don't remember his name, but he did get a red card for it outside of the
Derry,
box.
I could be wrong.
He got a red card for it. I mean, fair.
Yeah.
And then, a few other chances. Griezmann could have had two, three more goals.
He could have. And there was also a crossbar involved later in the game.
True. But anyways, France...
the crossbar was obviously involved in the game.
The whole game.
But the crossbar was hit by, I think it was Gignac. I couldn't be certain. But France could have had, five goals in the second half.
Yep. So France grabbed the win there, which was good. Props to Giroud. He really did step up second half. Played really well as well.
Can you see that once more just for the camera?
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to give him too much credit. His head's already big enough. But yeah, he played well for sure. And last but not least, we've got Germany versus Slovakia. I think this one was more one of the most one-sided games. Germany obviously showing their you know, talent and ability. They're class. I mean, you were saying Slovakia didn't play bad.
They did not. Yeah. I think Slovakia gave a very good account for themselves in this game. They agreed. Actually looked like they were making forward passes. They were getting in the space. Yeah. They created some chances.
Also, you have to... People think of Slovakia as an established kind of team in Europe, but this is their first Euros as an independent nation since the since Czechoslovakia. So they haven't really been here for long, but you think of them as a kind of a player, someone who can change the course of a tournament, but it's their first one. So yeah. They've done quite well, and you can see it from, skipping to the end of the game here, after the game, they went up to their fans, and their fans were cheering and really kind of supporting their team, because in context, they've done well.
Yeah, they're an up-and-coming team. Yeah. Like, you're looking at Wales, Northern Ireland, in this tournament. Poland as well, they're kind of newcomers, in the last, 20,
Switzerland,
30 years.
There's a few here because of that whole third place thing. You're seeing a lot more teams make it.
So they give a good account for themselves. They can hold their heads high, but Germany were just way too good on the day.
Definitely. To start the game, they played with Gomez up top, which is a change from the Götze. And then they also played Draxler on the left, who had up their man of the match with maybe Kruse or something.
Yes, Kruse was great.
Boateng as well. Too many good performances.
Boateng is a Rolls Royce in central defense, but they also had some new players, Hector, the left back, and they also had Kimmich.
Yeah, and they played really well. They both played really, really well, giving that width to open up the game. Kruse in midfield was phenomenal, just spraying these passes. Gomez... he scored. He got his second, but the first goal
it was 1-0 from Boateng. It was a corner kick. The ball comes across. Boateng volleys it on the ground. A slight deflection, but it was going in.
Yeah,
it was going in.
But it was brilliant.
Shortly after that, there was a penalty.
Also missed the penalty. Yeah. So a few things here. You'd think Müller was a penalty taker for Germany, but I think what it was Ozil was given that role because Müller has missed that crucial penalty in the semifinal for Bayern Munich. And apparently since then, he's just not been feeling
it. Which penalty was this?
It was for Bayern in the semis. I don't remember who they played the semis this year.
The Champions League?
Yeah. I think it was...
Was it Atletico? Or was it Real?
Yeah, I think it was Atletico. And what happened is, apparently he's just not been the same. He's missed like four of his last penalties.
Yeah, he hasn't scored much this tournament either.
Yep. And he's actually not had a good tournament. He's been one of the underperformers for Germany. Usually coming in, we think he's going to break the German all-time scoring record. He's going to score tons of goals, all the tap-ins people talk about when he's, in the right place at the right time. But he really hasn't stepped up yet. But fortunately for them, the likes of Draxler have stepped up, Kruse... even Ozil had a good game, but unfortunately with the penalty miss, he's just not made for it. He like strolls up to the ball.
He didn't look comfortable. He didn't look menacing enough from the spot. But you know what? They had so many chances in this game, and it was 2-0 before the half mark was halftime.
Yeah, Gomez scoring. So he has 5 goals in the Euros now.
Draxler.
No, Draxler's the third.
Draxler created the second goal.
Yes, he did. Which he did brilliantly. Yes. He left that guy for dead.
Yes, the guy was actually dead on the field. The field could swallow him up.
Couple of stepovers and he was gone. He was rooted to the spot.
Yeah.
But Gomez's 5th goal in the Euros means he's matched Klinsmann's record. Good for him. If he scores one more before the end, he'll be the outright German scorer in the Euros. So, that's a good thing for him to have.
Like all German strikers, their time in Germany, they get 1,000 caps.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an ample opportunity to break all these records.
Podolski's the same. He's got like a million goals as well, closer.
He's got almost 130 caps.
Yeah.
For Germany. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Nani yesterday had 100 caps for Portugal, which, that's...
Yeah. I mean, you've still got like Terluka playing for Croatia. You've got a few of these players who are still a skirtle still for Slovakia. But yeah, Draxler got the goal that he really does deserve at the end.
Yes, he did.
Because he was really up there, man of the match for me.
And terrible marking from the corner. It was completely open.
They all marked the header and then the ball that kind of came out of it. No one was there. Germany going through, keeping a clean sheet. Neuer with one really, really good save, I think, at like 2-0 or 1-0.
Yes. That was a couple of good saves from Neuer. Yeah, as I said, Slovakia did well in this game. But Germany, they had one or two chances other than the 3 goals that they scored that they could have also scored. And they missed a penalty. So it could have been 6-0.
Oh, definitely. No, they could have. And Germany now go on to play the winner of, as we preview these games, Belgium are playing right now, actually. As we speak, let's see how they're doing. They are 1-0 up at halftime against Hungary. Alderweireld scoring from a De Bruyne assist.
Yeah, and the stat before this game was that they had never had a 0-0 between them.
Oh, really?
And that continues.
Okay. Well, I mean, we didn't... Obviously, we're not seeing the goal. We're doing this now. But I'm assuming it was from a free kick or a corner of some sort. You know, De Bruyne assist to Alderweireld, of course. Probably.
This is the... you know, I've said this about the English team and then the Belgian team in this tournament, that the English team is full of the English players who play in the Premier League.
Right.
And the Belgian team is full of the foreigners. Yep. You know, the foreign stars. You know, you got Hazard, Vertonghen, Alderweireld, all these other...
They're a fantastic team. Yeah, Lukaku. They're a fantastic team. And they really should go far, especially, as we said, on this left-hand side of the draw. They really should go far.
The left-hand side of the field as well.
Yes. So back to Germany and previewing kind of the upcoming games. They're going to play the winner of Spain and Italy, okay? And I mean, this is obviously... This could have been a final. But we're getting it in the quarterfinal again because of the way the draw happened. And, you know, that's England and Italy's fault for being on that side of the draw.
Yeah, but, it really is. It's also England's fault for the whole Brexit. So
that's everything's England's fault. But to be fair, here's an interesting stat. I'm not sure if Germany, you know, are gonna like this or not. But every time they've been eliminated from a major tournament, it's been out of one of these teams. So in 2006, they were knocked out by Italy in the World Cup.
In recent history.
Yeah, obviously. 2008 by Spain, 2010 by Spain, 12 by Italy, 14 they didn't face any of them, and 2016 now.
And 14 was when they won the World Cup.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, first of all, Spain or Italy, you think, go through?
Well, and this is also another final in itself, because, you know, Italy, the four-time World Cup winners, they have been in a few finals in recent years as well.
Yeah.
The 2012 final
of
Spain and Italy. Mm. So Italy is always a dark horse. They beat Belgium 2-0 somehow. So you can't just write them off.
No, you can't. I think Italy have a really big chance against Spain.
And on the other hand, you have Spain, who have, you know, they've done well. They beat Turkey. They crushed Turkey.
They've clicked. They've definitely clicked.
But they lost to Croatia 2-1.
Yeah.
So how will they do against Italy? You know,
that's the thing. I mean, it seems to be like more of the defense of Italy versus the attack of Spain in this game. Iniesta's obviously playing really well for Spain, but yes, they looked really good up until that Croatia game. Which, to be fair, they did control, but then they somehow allowed them back in.
There was also a missed penalty, Sergio Ramos.
So you wanna? Oh yeah, true. You wanna predict this one?
Italy? To be honest, a friend had sent me, you know, her knockout bracket.
Yeah.
And you know, I'd picked. My picks were, you know, Poland to win, Wales to win,
Croatia
to win. So yeah. I was wrong there. And then France, obviously, and Germany, etc. But when it came to Spain and Italy, I considered, you know, how it would be if I picked Spain.
Right.
If I picked Spain, I almost thought, but what about Italy? If I picked Italy, but what about Spain?
Yeah.
So I picked Italy.
Okay, so Italy. Italy for you to go through?
Italy for me, this could be an upset, yes.
Okay. I think Italy might actually go through.
I agree. I picked Italy,
Spain will go
through.
It
just feels like I should have said Spain.
Right.
It's one of those.
I'll say Spain, you say Italy, no one's upset.
How about I say Spain, and you say Italy?
Fine.
All right.
But yeah, so Germany to play one of those. I'm really looking forward to both those games. Should be crackers there.
Although I have to be you know what? Germany versus Spain or Germany versus Italy? I'd watch both those games.
Yeah, no, definitely. You think Germany gonna go through both times?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, just based on the way they played today and, you know, how consistent they've been as opposed to the Italians or the Spanish.
Portugal are going to be playing Poland in the quarters. Like we said, they could very easily find themselves in the semis by playing nobody. So, you know, good luck to them. Wales is going to play the winner of Belgium and Hungary. I think we're pretty much expecting Belgium to come through this game. They're already 1-0 up at halftime. They really should. Hungary have had a phenomenal phenomenal years. Them and Iceland. Agreed.
Yeah.
But Hungary, like, I think this is the end of the road for them against this Belgian side.
Yeah, I think the, you know, the high point of the tournament for Hungary, you know, an aging squad, obviously, was against Portugal.
Yeah, in this 3-3.
The 3-3, you know, fantastic game. But, you know,
finishing top of the group, I think, yeah.
Were they?
Yeah, I think that they were top of the group. Iceland were second and Portugal was third. Yeah. So, you know, they've done well enough already.
Yeah, they have. You know, but, you know, if we're going to assume that Belgium's going through, it's going to be Belgium versus Wales in that quarterfinals.
That's a good game.
And this game, if you ask me to predict this game, you know, assuming it's Belgium, I'd have to say Belgium will go through, but it might be one of those shootouts. It might be like a 5-2.
Right. I mean, I think Wales have every chance, but the thing with Belgium is they're always good on paper, they're always a dark horse, but they choke. Once in a while, you'll get this game where, you know, they'll make it through Hungary and then they'll lose to Wales. But anyways, Belgium should make it all the way to the semis there. And then you've got France, who are already through, playing the winner of Iceland-England. Nothing is guaranteed with England.
Nope.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing is a given. So you've got Iceland who could, I feel like, could take them all the way to penalties and then anything could happen.
It's definitely going to be how they set up, you know, but they have Gylfi Sigurdsson, you know, a player of the Premier League.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about the English lineup.
Mm.
We have, you know, the standard, you know, Cahill, Smalling, Bertrand, Klein.
Yeah.
Okay, this is their...
Well, no, Bertrand probably won't play. That's just who they...
Right, this is who they started against Slovakia.
Right, but they'll probably play Walker and...
Sure.
Yeah.
Walker instead of Klein.
And Rose.
And Rose instead of Bertrand. But Eric Dier, for me, in that base of midfield...
He's the only one that can play that role.
The best English player this tournament.
For sure. He's been really good at kind of dictating the tempo of the play, breaking up all the opposition attacks, and he's been really good.
His passing range is also fantastic.
Yes. And it's a role that he's not really that familiar with. He's only played it for one season with Spurs this year, but he's done it fantastically, and as a result, he's now doing it for England. And, you know, in front of him, you've got the Ali and, I don't know, Henderson.
Rooney,
maybe,
Ali, you know, Lallana, Wilshere, Henderson. You know, a combination of those players.
You think Kane will start? Because Kane has had a pretty bad tournament. Vardy and Sturridge, whenever they've come on, they've put a better impact on the game. Vardy and Kane and started scoring those two late goals versus Wales. I think Kane has been really slow to get into the tournament. I think I would start Vardy or Sturridge ahead of him for this game.
Yeah, it's really surprising to see that Harry Kane has not been able to put his stamp his authority on this tournament because he is a good finisher. He does shoot well. But, you know, I think if there was a moment of magic that was provided by an English striker, it was Sturridge against
Wales. It would be Sturridge. Because he
can create a goal as opposed to just shoot on target.
Kane needs a bit more service. Sturridge can make things happen on his own, and Vardy gives you that pace on the counter. So it's going to be interesting to see how Roy Hodgson lines up this game. But I
really do not want to see Raheem Sterling start this game whatsoever. Because if you watch Germany play today, for example, you saw a well-oiled unit. No one really wants to hog onto the ball. Everyone sees, okay, space here, pass. Triangle here, pass there. So with England, when Raheem Sterling gets the ball, it's almost like all of a sudden he holds the team back from getting that angle.
It's also a philosophy. I mean, Germany, Spain, they play with that philosophy of pass into space, quick, short passes. England almost... they don't have one. They're trying to keep possession, and they've had really high possession in this tournament, but they can't break a team down when they just sit back, and Iceland will do that.
But when they played against Russia, they were finding those little gaps. They were doing well, but, you know, it's a 40-year-old Russian team. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do against Iceland.
Someone compared the Russian team to Alada recently. They just, like, broken down 40 years. Yeah, like,
a what?
Alada, like the Lada cars? The Russian cars from the Soviet Union?
Oh, those.
Have you seen those?
I've seen them in, like, movies.
All the cabs back home in Egypt are all Ladas. They're, like, from the Soviet Union. They're these really old cars with the fumes coming out the back. And the Russians, you know, they were compared to that because they had a really...
And it somehow still works after 30 years, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Basically. Yeah. So that's pretty much it for this round of 16. Tomorrow we've got two good games with the England game and the Spain-Italy. We'll see how that goes. By next podcast, I think we'll be pretty much into the semis. So we'll bring you up to speed with that next week. So let's move on to Momo of the Week.
Yes, we shall. Momo of the Week. So this is our Momo of the Week segment. And for our new listeners out there, we just want to clarify once more that Momo of the Week is a segment dedicated especially to events by, you know, people in the soccer world. Mostly of events off the footballing field that are, you know, extenuating. Exceptional.
Foolish,
fun, silly, stupid. You know, I think you get the drift at this point.
The reason it's Mumu is because Bernie told us that in Pidgin English, the Nigerian dialect, it means fool or idiot.
It's a very funny word for a fool. Mumu.
It sounds nice, too.
And with the kosh, you know, when something silly happens between one of the four of us, it's always a Mumu
moment.
A Mumu moment.
Yeah.
And so we bring to you a couple of Mumu moments, or just Mumu of the Week.
Yeah.
In this past week of football. And, well, our first week comes from a quote that I saw in a Swedish league recently. A player was given a second yellow card and sent off for farting on the field.
I have never heard of that ever happening before.
It was astonishing. And so exactly what happened was there was a translation from the player himself. And, you know, it goes something like this. So this way. I was bad in the stomach, and in the last minute, I delivered a loud one.
It's like a pass, almost.
A loud one. And then the referee came and gave me a yellow card, then a red. It was my second warning, and I had not kept track of my previous warning. I had zero recollection.
This sounds epic. It sounds like it could be in a movie.
Yeah. And nice. Then I was a little grouchy at the ref, but I couldn't understand what had happened. Everyone was laughing their asses off, says Lyndon Ljungqvist.
So you're saying that he had a yellow, farted on the field, and the ref deemed that insulting in some way.
It seems that the ref suspected that he may have done it against an opponent. And then he says, but provoking with a fart isn't really smart or normal. You know,
Is that in the rule book?
I wouldn't say so, but yes. He sent a fat one flying and then got a red. And the ref said it was unsportsmanlike behavior.
Nice.
So that is how we opened this week with Moomoo.
Cool. That is one of our best moves. That's farting on the field to get your red card. That's great.
It's like he farted on his opponent's leg.
Yeah, that's nasty. But I would be upset. I would really be upset.
Who would be upset? The opponent who got farted on?
Of course.
Or the player who got sent off?
No, I think the opponent who got farted on would be quite disgusted.
But that's if you felt the wind draft.
Oh, please, okay. Anyways, moving on. My Moomoo is... what is it?
USA Sports.
USA Sports is the Twitter publication. And they have a Twitter account, which somehow I stumbled upon. And obviously they got quite famous this week because they, before the semi-final game between Argentina and the U.S. in the Copa Centenario, they said, you know, they called him Leonardo Messi. Argentina stand in the way of historic run by U.S. soccer. And they think, you know, they're not sure why people outside of the U.S. take the U.S. lightly when it comes to football or soccer. It's because of stuff like this. Leonardo Messi is literally the most famous footballer of his generation. You cannot get his name wrong.
Well, I dare say all time. With TVs and, you know, the popularity of the sport growing in the country, players in the U.S., you know, Michael Bradley has played at AS Roma.
This is a guy who knows how to do research. Like, he works for a publication. You cannot call him Leonardo Messi, like, online. And then they apologize for it, sorry guys, yes, we realize it's Lionel Messi, haha. Yeah. What?
I think Leonardo Messi had the last laugh in that.
Oh, definitely.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that. Yeah. But that's definitely Moomoo for me.
Yeah, for sure.
You got one more, or is that it?
Yes, I do. From the Euros. And this one is a more famous person. Arsene Wenger of Arsenal, the manager. I guess, you know, the Euros are in France, and, you know, he's, you know, probably visiting his hometown for the summer, watching some games.
He does a bit of punditry for French TV as well.
So he was actually, you know, out on the field, you know, talking. It must have been a training camp or something. Mm. And he saw one of the Croatian team doctors, Tomislav Mazar. And he mistook this man for Unai Emery.
The Sevilla coach.
Ex-Sevilla coach. The quote exactly is that, you know, apparently this Croatian team doctor had already been mistaken by a few people, asked for autographs and so and so and such. And so Wenger basically says, you know, Mazar says, I was talking to David Trezeguet. Wenger comes over, shakes my hand, and congratulates me on the Europa League win with Sevilla.
How nice. How gracious.
Yeah.
How gracious. And then he asks him about...
And then he said, if I'd reached an agreement with PSG.
Nosy. Just nosy. He just wants to know, eh?
As if that's the way that rumors get spread, apparently.
Right. But, I mean, to be fair, I'm looking... You're holding the laptop there, and I'm looking at the guy's face. He looks... very, very similar to Unai Emery. You gotta give Wenger a little bit of doubt there. Look at him. It's very similar. And you think, you know, it must be him. It must be him.
It's unfortunate that, Arsene Wenger is an old man, and just because it is Arsene Wenger, it does make our Moomoo of the Week segment. It is quite hilarious to us.
All right, moving on to... Well, I keep saying it's South America, not really North America, but, you know, the Copa America Centenario. We had the semis happen this week with Argentina versus the USA, and obviously this was a big deal for the US. They're in the semis of this tournament. They're now starting to face proper teams, and we're going to start this pregame. You got really, really mad watching the build up to the game because you vented at me. You were like, this is unacceptable. I'm like, Rochet, what's wrong? And you said that 3 out of 4 of the pundits on Fox News predicted a U.S. win.
Yeah, yeah. Former U.S. players, you know, I think it was Alexi Lalas, Eric Winalda. I could be mistaken. But then them and the host or hostess of the actual show. So there's three of them, and then another guy who looked, you know, Hispanic, Latin American.
He was, I think, Mexican.
Or Mexican, yeah. And so out of the four of them, there was so much patriotism in the pregame, you know, with all the montages, U.S. historic run, you know, Leonardo Messi tweeter, we're going to, is this our time? You know, in the Americas, we're in the semifinals, USA, USA. And then so they start picking who's going to win the game between the three out of four of them. And so the three of them pick the USA.
Yeah.
You know, I guess they were being biased or patriotic or whatever.
The Mexican guy. Excuse them.
And then the Mexican guy picked Argentina. The Hispanic guy
because
picked
Argentina. Because he's not insane.
He might have been not insane, possibly. And then the other three even had a little chirp at him, you know, a little... They got in his ear like, are you sure you don't want to just pick the USA? Like, come on, let's
It's almost as if he's going against the tide. Yeah.
No, he's like, no, I want Argentina to win.
Yeah.
They're like, okay.
The running president doesn't want that guy in the country, so obviously
he wants Argentina to win. Credit to him, because he got it right.
Yeah, I mean, I could have, like, anybody could have told him that. A two-year-old could have told him that he got it right. I mean, anyways, the game went on.
That's how the mob mentality is, really.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
that's
good, true. Good, even more credit to him in that sense.
So the U.S. did get absolutely smashed 4-0 by Argentina in the semifinal. I love the idea of it being such a big build-up. Everyone's really looking forward to it. Then 3 minutes in, Lavezzi goal. Thank you very much. Game over.
Yeah, the U.S. did not have one shot on target in the whole 90 minutes.
Yep.
I was watching, you know, the Fox News, or the Fox Coverage, Sports feed, and, you know, with the commentary and such. And it was nice to see that the extremely biased commentary actually had to relinquish a little bit and give credit to Argentina.
Oh, how kind to give credit to Argentina.
Yeah, because they really had nothing to say about the US.
A big highlight, though, of this game was Messi stepping up to that free kick. He was on 54 goals, matching with Batistuta for all-time Argentinian goal scoring. Obviously, Batistuta did it in much less games, but, you know, he was crazy prolific.
Yeah. I know Batistuta was kind of hurt that Messi had broken his record, but he was supportive.
Yeah, so Messi, that free kick, beating Brad Guzan, top right, was a he's really improved his free kick taking ability this season. You really enjoyed that one.
This free kick was one of the better free kicks that I have seen.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was stepping up to take it, I thought, you know, this is far, it might be a sensational one. Yeah. But it was...
It had to be. It basically had to be.
It was so good. He beat Guzan on his near post.
Yeah.
Guzan didn't even get a finger on it.
It was brilliant. It hit the top of the bar and went in. It was a really, really well-taken free kick.
Physics was redefined or something.
And then from then on, I mean, Higuain scoring two more. He's been playing well this tournament, keeping Aguero on the bench. Higuain with quite a few goals.
Messi had a goal and two assists in this game.
Yep. He's always pivotal. He's always in the game. And like you said, Yoshe, no shots on target. Game ended 4-0. Argentina moving to their second Copa America final in a row. They're going to play Chile, who beat Colombia 2-0. Colombia started this game really well. Chile, I think, were favorites. That's fair to say. But Colombia started the game really well, keeping possession, looking dangerous. But then Chile do this thing where they suffocate you with their high press, and regardless of how the game's going, they always have a goal in them at any time, and they got two really quick goals.
Yeah, you want to talk about, you know, suffocating style of play, you talk about Diego Simeone's Atletico, for example, but you're seeing it at a national level whenever you watch Chile. If you watch Chile-Argentina, it's always such a scrappy game, you almost can't breathe when you're watching it.
Yes, I agree.
There's no space to watch.
You forget to breathe almost sometimes because you're following the chilly energy around the field.
But it's not one of those like exhilarating, I can't breathe. It's one of those like, oh, I actually am suffocating. I need to get out of here. It's hard to watch. It's difficult. And that's what Chile do. They're great.
And can you imagine how the opposition on the field feel. And that's exactly what happened with Chile getting a two-goal lead early on in the first half.
Yeah.
And then the weather started to turn, and at halftime, I think there was like up to an hour delay because there was thunderstorms, rain.
Torrential,
When the game came back to start, I mean, the game was pretty much done. Chile just sat there, held the ball. Carlos Sanchez got a stupid red card for Colombia. And then that was it. They just, you know, ended the game professionally, 2-0 to Chile. And they will now meet Argentina for the same final that we had in the last Copa America.
And every match that they've played since the Copa America final has been a scrappy 2-1 here, 2-1 there.
Yeah. So. And to be fair, Chile-Argentina is a good final because they are the two best teams in the continent.
Sure. You know, in terms of style, it might be difficult to watch at times.
Yeah.
But it's still the two best teams playing.
I'm quite looking forward to it. That's happening tonight. Any predictions?
I do feel that it's Argentina's turn to just win.
You know? I mean, the thing is, the story obviously is that Messi has gotten... people say Messi hasn't done enough with Argentina. But then others will say, well, he's got into three finals now. Two Copa finals and one World Cup final.
If he didn't have Higuain,
then yes, Higuain both times, had he finished a couple of chances, they would have won.
Yeah.
So, you know, how much does that define a player in terms of one chance going in, oh, yes, he's the best player we've ever seen ever, and then no, he's not good enough. So it's tough. But if he loses a third final with Argentina, that would be really hard to take.
He would almost be in the same echelon of player as Michael Ballack.
Yeah,
who lost almost every final there was to lose, he has lost.
Yeah.
Champions League, World Cup, European final.
Yeah, he's quite bad luck, isn't he?
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see how that goes. But then we did have the third and fourth playoff already yesterday with Colombia beating the U.S. 1-0.
Yes.
The funny thing here is the U.S. finally meet two good teams in Colombia and Argentina, and they don't score a single goal.
Well, they had played Colombia in the group stage. They lost 2-0, two set pieces.
Yeah.
But this time around, it was an open play goal, well crafted, and James was obviously
very well crafted.
James was the creator of this
Baca
goal.
Baca scoring that one.
But it was in the first half. The U.S. actually played very well in this game.
They didn't play bad, that's true. Dempsey had a really good free kick.
Very good free kick, my God. If you see the highlight for this free kick, you'd be impressed. You know, I think Clint Dempsey is a very good player.
He played well this tournament. He scored quite a few goals.
He plays very well for the States. He's a class act.
Yeah.
And
Ospina with, I think, by far the best goalkeeping performance of the whole tournament. He's been fantastic.
There were many chances for the States.
He kept them in this game. He also helped against the penalties against, I think it was Peru or Venezuela, one of those with Colombia going through on penalties, Ospina saving two. Also, a few last-minute saves against in that game as well before the penalties. He's been by far the best keeper in this tournament, and this is why Arsenal are going to have a hard time keeping hold of him when they have Cech and he's going to be second fiddle. But at the end of the day, Colombia coming third, Argentina, U.S. first and second, regardless. I think that's quite a fair assessment on how we all predicted the tournament to go. Argentina, Chile first, second, Colombia third.
Yeah. And the U.S., the host nation, finishing fourth?
Not bad
for them.
Not
overachievement,
bad.
Really.
Not bad. So, yeah, that's pretty much it for the Copa. We want to talk a little bit about Brexit. So, a few days ago, Britain
had voted. There was a referendum on whether or not Britain would still be part of the European Union.
Yeah,
a very political, you know, economic vote. So the English voted on I think it was Thursday night.
Yeah, 48% to 52%.
Yeah, a 4% difference. And so basically they voted to leave.
Yeah.
And this now has massive financial repercussions that will be ongoing for, you know, years and years.
Yeah, so this is officially, if they do go through this, it will kind of kicking in 2019 or so, in a few years. But people are already talking about the effect of this on the Premier League. I mean, there's already a Wenger quote. I'm not sure if it's fake or not, but it's quite funny. Where the quote is that the pound is really weak right now because the pound dropped for like 1.44.
Oh, yeah, the pound has dropped to pre-1984 levels.
Yep.
So buy pounds.
So so Wenger's already come out saying, fake or not, it's funny regardless that, you know, the pound is really weak right now, so we're not looking very good in the transfer market. We're going to have to hold off on some buys. You know, any excuse.
As he does every summer.
Yeah, yeah. But there are more credible worries here with work permits and
a lot of speculative items, because it's hard to say exactly what's going to happen, you know, overall with the whole Brexit affecting the Premier League. You know, obviously the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, work permits and player visas. You know,
yes.
When Britain is part of the European Union, it's a lot easier for players from South America to come over, you know, with a European visa and be able to play in England. Now they'll have to go through the whole UK process, which is going
to
be...
But also European players going to play in the UK will need to apply for a different visa.
Yeah, there's going to be some restrictions there, but there may very well be some special conditions imposed.
So there are a lot of conditions that make life a bit easier on the Premier League, regardless of whether they're in the EU or not. So if the player has a certain amount of caps for his national side, it shows that he's a special talent. If he's worth more than, you know, the transfer is worth more than 10 million, then clearly it's worth the investment. So they get the visas, fine. Yeah. But it's the youth. It's that young talent that you try and prize away. The young Brazilians, the young Africans. It's going to be very, very hard now to do that. And that could have an effect. I mean, Arsenal, I just know this example because, you know, I'm follow it. Wellington Silva, he's a Brazilian player for Arsenal who's been on loan for 3 years now trying to get a work permit. But he doesn't have the caps for Brazil. He's not worth more than 10 million. So it's been very hard. And this will just become more of a trend.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. And I really hope that they don't go back to what it was before in terms of all these regulations and all that crap. I really hope that they can, you know, even though they do leave, they have some new kind of system that makes
it easier. They could work it out. That's true. Yeah, that's true.
It would be good.
One interesting thing, though, is people brought up Gareth Bale. He's basically the only, you know, British player playing abroad of any sort of importance. And Madrid, it's true, Madrid have a quota where they're not allowed to have more than 3 non-EU players. So they already have Navas, Danilo, and Casemiro. Marcelo and stuff have been there for long enough. So the problem now is they're saying, if Bale is still there come 2019 or whatever, he's going to turn into a non-EU player.
Do you really think that Bale's actually going to be at Real for 6-7 years as a Galactico?
I think when Ronaldo leaves, they're going to start... Yeah, I mean, this is a great segue. Bernie just wrote an article, check it out on the blog, about how he believes Madrid... Well, first, Bale is going to start outperforming Ronaldo, and that, obviously, as age catches up to Ronaldo, and that Madrid are going to turn into a more Bale-centric team. You know, it's a great article to... Basically, this is the point that he makes. So check it out.
Very interesting, yeah.
I think that pretty much covers everything we want to talk about in terms of, you know, the Euros and the Copa. A few little other things. Mbolo has officially moved to Schalke.
Yeah.
He looks like a good young player.
He's a good young player. And I think Schalke is a good club for a good young player like Mbolo.
We'll see how it goes. A lot of rumors with United and Mourinho just going out, splashing the cash. Mkhitaryan looks like it's almost done.
So rumors of Mkhitaryan being, resolved or the agreement reached for 38 million euros.
Yeah, Ibra as just well, rumors, apparently. Ibra to United. Yeah.
There's a lot of talk going on. I think a lot of these announcements will be made over the next coming weeks after the Euros, mostly.
Yeah. We're lucky to have the Euros that take away from all these stupid transfer rumors because people are focusing on the Euros. But once that's done, you're going to start getting back into the whole who's moving where and for how much. Yeah. And
On one hand, you want to hear all this news about the transfers, what's happening.
Yeah.
On the other hand, when you see the reporters getting in the face of the player, trying to look for a quote, some kind of angle to weasel into, to write something about, it's disgusting.
Right? Yeah, I mean, we saw it with Ronaldo taking that mic, throwing it in the pond.
Exactly, yeah. and you know, some reporters do go the extra mile to say something sensational to get some viewers,
So transfer rumors is the time to lie about stuff. It's clickbait. It's all clickbait. This is the player that Liverpool won. You'll never believe it. It's like, yeah, you're talking about Götze. Like, no one cares. You know what I mean? Anyways, that's pretty much it. We will talk next week. We'll have a Copa winner, and we will have the semifinals of the Euros.
But will we have the entire Kosh squad?
Next week, I know Bernie... Oh, yes. Alex is back on... No, Alex is back Alex on back the in second. The second.
That's right.
I mean, what date is it? Like the 20? Ooh,
today's the 26th.
It's going to be quite tight.
And June only has 30 days, so yes.
Yes, so we might have Alex.
We should.
We should.
We should really
Bernie's back now, I know that. Yeah. All right, so...
So you might see the full squad, Kosh lineup next week.
Yeah, or hear them at least.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
All right, see you guys next week.
Get out of here.
Thank you for downloading the KoshCast. Get in touch at underthekoshblog@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at under_thekosh. And for articles, predictions, and the full experience, go to underthekoshblog.com.